This podcast is brought to you by Knowledge at Wharton. For more information, please visit knowledge.wharton.upenn.edu.
We're here with Olivier Chatin, a professor at HEC Paris, who is also an academic senior fellow at Wharton's Mac Institute for Innovation Management. He's here with us to talk about his paper on value creation strategies. Welcome.
Hi, Deborah. I'm very glad that you're having me to talk about that paper. Maybe I can start with giving you a small summary of what the paper is about and why we wrote it.
Sure.
So the paper is essentially a methodology to understand how firms in a buyer-to-buyer context are able to create value for their customers when they are selling multiple lines of business to the same customer. So very often you have firms that are actually selling different products to the same buyer because the buyer is interested in having some kind of one-stop shop. This is something that you see a lot with professional firms, like consulting firms or law firms. Actually, our paper is set in the context of law firms, but you would also see that, for instance, if you look at some equipment manufacturer who are going to be selling multiple types of parts to the same OEM, like you would see that in aeronautics and also in the automobile industry. So we think that it's really important to understand how the fact that you are selling multiple types of products to the same buyer is actually creating value. And we realize that there are many reasons why you might be creating value by doing that. And our paper is an attempt at figuring out why it is the case. And we do that by, in the end, estimating what creates value for a given client. And there are basically two reasons why you may be creating value. One is because you're actually good. You're selling a good product individually. But we're also interested in understanding when is it that selling multiple products is creating additional value on top of the value created by each product.
So what are your paper's key takeaways here?
So one thing that surprised us is that when we started the paper, we had the notion that it's necessarily good to sell multiple products to the same buyer, and that in the case of the professional firms we were looking into, it really made sense for them to sell multiple products because they would use what they learn in one area to provide a better service in the other area. So we had this idea that, well, especially if you're a lawyer, a law firm, and you're helping your client, say, in merger and acquisition, but also in capital markets and maybe in real estate, all at the same time, you can really cross-fertilize these things. So we started from that assumption. But what we found was that actually, even for a firm like this, it's still difficult to add one more line of business. And that the real hurdle is really to create relationship in the first place.
And why do you think that is?
So that's something that we really had to think harder. And what we think is that, especially for the law firms we are looking into, that every time, even though you may know the client well, each time it's on a slightly different subject, you really have to start over and learn a lot about the client on one hand. An alternative explanation is that some clients are very wary of having one supplier of service serving multiple areas. So even though you might be the best expert for me, if you're already my best expert for two or three other subjects in law, I may want to have to deal with someone else because I might be afraid that if I get all the information from the same supplier, I may be missing out on some important themes. So I might have a preference for diversity in terms of input, which was something that is apparently more important than the savings you can realize by bundling all these products together.
So in that case, what should businesses and organizations do?
So in the end, what we find is still that a lot of these firms, they still adopt the model of one-stop shop. Because even though it's costly to add one more type of product, and to each time I want to supply you, it's still expensive for me, and so there's value that's destroyed there. It turns out that it's even more value destructive to create one more relationship from scratch. So firms have to organize or to be very savvy about balancing the need to have multiple suppliers, knowing that the big cost is really to create one new relationship with any supplier. So on one hand, they have to really make sure that they have just enough suppliers, the type of suppliers they have. But at the same time, they need to be able to realize that, well, even though these suppliers are there, we already know them, it's not asking something else from a current supplier is not a free lunch. So they still are going to incur new costs. So you really have to think hard about the portfolio of supplier you want to have. Because even though qualifying them is expensive, asking them to do more once they are qualified is also expensive. And this is the second type of cost, is something that you may underestimate.
Is there an optimal way to execute a one-stop shop, or are you saying that organizations should stay away from that?
No, I think it's a good thing in most cases, but it's a bit more complicated than we initially thought. We thought that, of course, it's, you know, when in one-stop shop, it's all about you create that relationship and then you leverage it, and then you are able to really create synergies. But what it turns out that synergies are harder to realize than one might have thought, at least in the setting we were studying, and that it's harder than we thought, essentially. So you want to organize as a provider one-stop shop. It's very important for you to show that you're good in each of the areas you want to provide. So on one hand, you want to have at least one that's very good, so you can justify the cost of being qualified as a supplier. And then you need to be good enough in the others in order to also be used and tapped into once you become a qualified supplier. However, it turns out that being qualified is just the beginning, and it's still going to be costly to use you, and as a buyer, you might underestimate the fact that the new supplier, even though you know them for one type of product or in one area of work, they will still need to be retrained, even though it seems that you've been dealing with them for 4 years. So the fact that they have to switch product or to add a new product is actually more costly and harder than you think. So as a buyer, you still want to use them, but you should maybe lower your expectations in terms of how much we can deliver, at least initially.
It sounds like your conclusions debunk some widely held assumptions in the marketplace about one-stop shops. What sets your research apart from prior work in this area?
So the findings were a bit unexpected for us, and actually I had prior work where I assumed that things were maybe easier than what we thought, so it was kind of counterbalancing some of my earlier work, and that came as a big surprise. Now, we want to put a word about the methodology what we're using here, because for businesses, it's usually very hard to understand what creates value, and managers don't necessarily have a lot of data to do that, and especially in situations where you see there are multiple competitors, but when there are long-term relationships, it's not clear. You know who's working with whom, but you don't necessarily know how much they pay for that and what exactly is the service we are getting. But with our methodology here, we are able to use relatively sparse information just about who's working with whom at the level of the market, to really infer a lot about what customers value. And that's something that is a bit new to strategic management as a method. And while there's a lot of methods in economics that tend to require to know prices, here we don't need to know prices. We just need to know who's working with whom and can already infer a lot out of that. So I felt that although the methodology is really at the beginning, and that's something that we are borrowing from econometrics, this is something that ultimately will help firms understand better what customer value in a way that is not asking for too much data, but although it's a lot of analysis, but a lot of firms already have those data. They know who's working with whom, about what subject, and that's already enough to make some very good, dedicated guesses as to what matters for the customers.
So what will you do next as a follow-up to this research?
Well, we're not totally done with it, so we're still pushing the paper towards publication because it's, to some extent, it's very innovative, I think, and it was very difficult to make the paper accessible even to research audience. One of the next steps that my co-author Denis Amindrutsa, who's also at HSA Paris, and I are taking is to release some open source software that will be accessible in order to apply that methodology. That's something that has already been done by one of by Professor of Economics, Jeremy Fox, but this is something that we want to be able to be used by most people. So the next step is really to make that methodology accessible to more researchers, and ultimately we hope it's going to percolate into the world of practice.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Deborah.
For more business news and analysis from Knowledge at Wharton, please visit knowledge.wharton.upenn.edu.